Welcome back to Case of the Sunday Scaries. I'm Elise.
And I'm Annie.
And Annie, we are not too far away from you taking maternity leave because you're going to be a mommy.
A mom to a child, to a whole human.
Send me all the advice.
I am so open to mom advice. It's actually kind of hilarious because everyone's like, you're going to hate all the unsolicited advice. And I'm over here with the pen and paper like, tell me more.
You're being a sponge right now and taking it all in. Well, just no mom criticisms or shaming, though.
None.
That is not part of what
not
we are about.
Here. No way.
Thank you. I have some parenting advice for you.
Give me it.
You're doing fine if none of your children ever end up on this podcast.
That's my biggest fear. I'm not kidding you. My one goal is to make sure that she is a good person and not serial killer.
I don't think you have anything
I
to
know,
worry
but it's
about.
One of those weird fears. I have like basically this not control over her life by any means. She can be whoever she wants to be. But you kind of do shape your kids. We hear all the time with serial killers about their past.
Well, Annie, you're not an abusive, horrible person.
I know, but it's still nerve-wracking.
I just can't believe you're going to be a mom.
I can't either. That makes two of us.
Well, I know we're giggling about it, but just a heads up to the listeners. Annie and I have pre-recorded some content, but we are also making sure that she has enough time to be at home and enjoy it however long she wants to, a little baby and the new adjustments to her family. So be patient with me. I am going to be doing some solo episodes. But we also have some really incredible guests that are going to be coming on to help me break down. I know at least two cases in particular that I've wanted to cover. One is a current trial that is going on, a current case, and one is something that happened in the past. But one of my dear friends that if you followed me from the time on The Bachelor, you probably already know and love and might have a guess as to who I'm talking to. But he is going to come on and talk about a lived experience that he went through that I think will be unfortunately all too real to us in this time of school shootings and mass shootings seeming to be like an epidemic.
Like an everyday thing almost.
We've gotten way too used to it. So politics aside, we just want to talk about what happened and what that experience is like for those that are unfortunately in those situations. So we have a lot of great content. Annie will just be out for some of it.
I'll be tuning in from my living room couch.
How is that going to be weird for you to listen to this podcast and not hear your own voice in it?
I think I'll love it. Like sometimes it's kind of hard to hear my own voice, you know, whenever you're listening to yourself on a recording. And I'm also just really pumped for the guests you have lined up because they're great.
They are great. And they are some familiar faces. That is for sure. But I am going to shut up because I have a couple months where I'm going to be talking a whole heck of a lot.
Save your voice.
We got to keep this instrument intact. I'm going to pass the mic over to you for today's case.
The case I have for everyone today, you know me and my unbuttoned cases. It's not a case we're going to have closure or where we're all going to exit knowing that justice was served. And I know this is might be back-to-back cases where I'm doing this to our audience, and I'm sorry, but I came across this case, and there's no way I couldn't talk about it. It's a case about a 20-year-old woman named Jahlia Davis who was tragically killed, but the way that she was killed is still a mystery to many people, myself included, and I felt super compelled to just get the word out in hopes that one day Jahlia and her family will get the justice they deserve. Jahlia Rose Davis was born on November 2nd, 1991, not too far from here in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Okay, I have got to interrupt you. I'm sorry to do it. You're only a sentence into this. And already I'm pushing my water aside, sitting next to me, because why do these cases keep coming back to Colorado?
Always. I don't even try.
I don't either.
They find us.
You had one that started in Florida that came up to Colorado. Like, what is in the water around here?
It's a hot spot for crime.
This is seriously so weird. I feel like in the 70s, it was like California and serial killers, right?
I mean, even Ted Bundy came through Colorado.
What?
Yeah. He spent time in Glenwood Springs Jail. Along with an Aspen jail, which is not far from here.
Maybe there's some like weird, some sort of bad energy here or something. I haven't felt it. I love the mountains. I don't love the snow, but I love the clean air. So I don't know what is going on, but it's weird that it keeps coming up.
I can also assure you we will not be in Colorado for long with this case.
Okay.
We're going to the Midwest.
Oh, another place. Where we're from.
Another place that we frequent. Jahlia had a sister known as Tabby, who was just 18 months younger, and the two were thick as thieves. They were truly best friends. I'm close with my sister, so I can only imagine how close these two, their bond was. They're super close in age. And Jalea was just a really good big sister. I found a photo of the two, and they look to be maybe 5 and 6. I'll post it on our Instagram. They have their hands wrapped around each other, and they're just in this big embrace. It's the cutest thing ever. Of course, they fought like we all do, but their sisterhood was very special, and that comes through in every interview and in every post that Tabby makes about her sister. Jalea was described as soft-spoken, she made friends easily, and was just a charming girl. After living in Colorado, the family moved to Ohio, so here we are, finally in the Midwest, where Jalea worked at a local Hollister store. Talk about a throwback.
Oh my God. Is Hollister still a thing?
I think so.
Oh, wow.
I always was so jealous of the Hollister girls. They smelled good. They had the flare pants. Ugh.
Hollister, Abercrombie, American Eagle. I couldn't afford any of it, but man, did I pretend to.
Man, did I walk in there and get my share of the perfume.
Oh, absolutely.
The free samples. So Jalea worked at Hollister while she was kind of trying to figure out what she wanted to do with her life. One option she was considering was becoming a cosmetologist, but unfortunately, she would never get that chance.
Woo-woo.
Let's fast forward to when Jalea was 20 years old. So it's Friday, November 18th, 2011. Jalea left her home in Marietta, Ohio between 3 and 4 p.m. to meet up with a friend named Kristen Betchel. The two girls had known of each other for a while, but they had gotten especially close in the past 2 to 3 months. Jalea drove to Kristen's house, and the girls planned on going out that night. I don't know about you, Elise, but one of my favorite things to do is driving to my girlfriend's house, putting on makeup, swapping out clothes, listening to music, talking about, I guess that's whenever I was younger, because now I don't really do that. But the girls were totally enjoying their time together, and they were getting ready to go to a big pregame. While the girls were getting ready, Jalea texted her mom and sister, and according to them, everything seemed completely normal, and Jalea was her usual happy-go-lucky mood. Once the girls got ready, they hopped in Jalea's car and they drove around picking up a few other people that were strangers to Jalea, most of whom were friends of Kristen's. They picked everyone up and then they finally got to their pregame spot, hung out there, drank some, played some party games, and then ended up heading to a nearby bar and pool hall called Nip and Q.
Nip and Q. Wow. Good times had by all. Down at the Nip and Q.
Kim, Jalea's mom, said that her last text to her daughter was between 9 and 9:30 p.m. She told her to be good and that she loved her. At 3:28 a.m. that next morning, Tabby received a call from Jalea asking her to pick her up from a gas station. Tabby was nearby with a friend, so she quickly agreed and the two headed over. During this phone call, Jalea can be heard telling Kristen to give her keys. Although it wasn't clear exactly what was said, Kristen's voice could be heard in the background of that call, according to Tabby. At 3:33 a.m., 5 minutes later, Jalea called Tabby back and sounded very angry and upset. She then asked Tabby to meet her at a different location along the interstate, a rest stop, which was a little bit closer to their house. And at this point, Tabby is getting super worried. She's asking Jalea, you know, what's wrong? What's going on? Jalea is super upset. According to Tabby, she was actually hysterical. And she tells her that, you know, I'll tell you whenever you get here, just get here quickly. Over the phone, Tabby can hear Jalea yelling. She's calling Kristen names, including bitch. She's telling her that she's a really bad friend. Just a very loud, angry scene. Jalea, who is still on the phone with Tabby, then informs her that she is now on the interstate and that she was close. So she's like, I'm coming for you. Meanwhile, Jalea's going, I'm also coming, and this is where we're trying to meet. It's unclear at this point in time how Jalea's getting there.
So Jalea and her buddy go out. They're doing a little pre-gaming. They go to the Nip and Q, and then something happens to upset
some
these
girls.
Some kind
of big fight.
Right.
Enough for Jalea to call her little sister and have her come pick her up.
Got it. And the whole time, are they in Jalea's car?
Yes.
I see. So that's very strange that Kristen is asking for the keys.
It's almost like she didn't want her friend drunk driving.
And let's be honest here. Alcohol can do some interesting things to your attitude. And we've covered that in quite a few episodes. And I'm sure our listeners have experienced that themselves. So was this really that big of a fight? Or is this the drama of a couple too many cocktails?
Totally. Tabby was about a 10-minute drive from the rest stop that she's supposed to pick up her sister at. Jalea is still on the phone with her. She's begging her to hurry. She's screaming about how terrible Kristen was, and she's crying. Tabby continues to reassure her sister, I am so close to you. I'm almost there. Just hang on. At 3:53 a.m., so just a few minutes after that, Tabby tries calling her sister back to confirm her location, but she isn't able to get a hold of her. So she calls Kristen. Remember, Kristen was obviously with Jalea and they're having this heated fight. The last thing Tabby remembers Kristen saying was something along the lines of, well, Jalea was mad because dot, dot, dot. And then Tabby doesn't remember anything else because as she's talking to Kristen, her and her friend come around a bend in the interstate and they see several cops blocking off the road. At this point, Tabby hangs up because she knows something is off. The girls pull over, they run up to the scene, and a police officer tells them that a woman's body had been found on the interstate. Tabby is petrified. She is begging for answers, but the only thing the cop would tell her was that the victim was, quote, an African-American female who had been wearing a white peacoat, end quote. That's when Tabby immediately knows that this was her big sister.
And that's interesting that they're not saying like, oh, there was a car accident. Unfortunately, like we've had a fatality. We're talking like minutes and they're just saying a body was
found. A body. Yep. Tabby calls her mother and the rest of the family. They all quickly arrive on the scene. The final rest stop where they're supposed to meet wasn't far from her house. So it makes sense they could all quickly arrive. After police identify the body and can confirm it, they relay the news that the body is in fact Jalea. The family is obviously in complete shock. I mean, Tabby was taking it really hard because she was truly on her way to save her sister. She knew something really heated had happened. She knew that her sister was kind of in this state of just really unhappiness and anger. As a sister, it's like just a dagger to my heart hearing that Tabby pulled up on the scene. It's super sad. As the Davis family try to process what just happened, more details emerge about Jalea and the scene of this accident. They learn that a truck driver was the first person to call 911 and that his call came in around 3:48 a.m., minutes after Tabby and Jalea got off the phone.
Of their last call together.
Yes. According to the 911 call, this driver reported that he saw a car broken down on the interstate. So he was trying to be a good Samaritan. He got out of his car. And that's when he saw a body laying on the interstate. He approached it. He said originally he hoped it was actually a deer. But unfortunately, he discovered Jalea's badly damaged body on the ground. He stayed on the scene waiting for police and other passerbys pulled over to help with this because this was a busy interstate and there was a lot of traffic. Even though it was super early on Saturday morning, it's 3:48 a.m., there's still always cars on the interstate. The sheriff department arrived soon after getting this call and they blocked off traffic, which is what Tabby and her friend drove upon.
This is all happening very quickly, which, I mean, like, kudos to the police department here for responding so quickly. But I'm still hung up on why are they saying not an accident? Like, they're saying a body was found, not there was a car accident.
It is weird. This whole case is weird. And so now I want to talk about how Jalea was found. It's going to get really graphic. And this is where I went from, oh my gosh, she was in some kind of horrible accident to, oh my gosh, let me reread that because something is definitely off. Jalea was discovered naked from the waist up. One leg was broken in half. Her right breast was missing and she was decapitated. Her clothing was found nearby and it was draped across the guardrail in a pile. The order of her clothes, which I'm going to hit upon hard, went her bra first, then her shirt on top of her bra, and then her pea coat on top of both. I want to reiterate that these items were stacked on top of each other and laid over the guardrail. The clothes were covered in blood. Her vehicle was found about a quarter of a mile north of her body. The car was still running, it was locked, and the headlights were on. From my understanding after reading the findings, at first it appears like the car had kind of coasted to a stop. It wasn't crashed into anything, but it was found at a complete stop, which is something to note. While all this investigating is happening and the family is there, Tabby calls Kristen, and she kind of informs her of this accident. The calls are really short, but Kristen does find out at that point in time that something really bad happened to her friend.
Well, where the hell did Kristen go? I thought they were in the same car together.
We're about to figure that out. Because as soon as this investigation took place, the Wood County Sheriff's Department immediately calls the death suspicious, and they decided to launch an investigation. The following day, the Sheriff's Department had one goal. They wanted to question everyone who had been with Jalea the night before, and there were three people in particular they wanted to talk to. One was Kristen, the girl on the phone. The other was a guy named Freddie Scott. And then the third was a girl
named
Katie Nelson.
Two first names.
Freddie Scott. One interesting tidbit is that all three of these individuals are the children of current or former police officers from Parkersburg, which is a city right next to Marietta where this incident happened. After talking with Toby, the first person they want to speak with is Kristen. Law enforcement got her address. They head over to her house. They do a few knocks, and then her dad answers the door. And her dad immediately says that Kristen didn't feel like talking and that she would be obtaining an attorney.
I know that that sounds suspicious, but if it was my kid, I would do the exact same thing.
My thought, exactly. Because if you're here and you listen to this, you're thinking two thoughts. The first is that it's never a bad idea to have legal representation, especially whenever cops are knocking at your door. But I also kind of paired that with, like, I don't know, if my friend was with me that night, she had been drinking, I know she got into a car accident, maybe I would go talk. But also back to the fact that she is the granddaughter of a former sheriff of the town.
So he knows how this goes, but I'm not even saying that. Here's my parenting advice for you. If your child ever does something, like kids, they're talking about 20-year-olds here, right? To me, that's kids still. Mm-hmm. You don't really know what all of your rights are. You don't know that police are legally allowed to lie to you about evidence that they don't have. All these things that we've learned through our research for a true crime podcast. But it's always smart to have a lawyer there to
I totally agree.
Hey, nope, don't answer that. Don't answer this. It does not mean that you're guilty, but I understand that when you first hear she's not talking, she's getting a lawyer, you're like, oh, what did you do, lady?
Yeah, exactly. 3 days later, Kristen's lawyer reaches out to law enforcement and informs them that she is ready to give her statement. She heads down to the police station and she does an interview where she gives her details of the night. She walks investigators through everything that happened. She started from where Jalea came over to where they pre-gamed at and then how the night ended according to Kristen. One question that gets asked a lot during this interview is if alcohol was involved, and if so, how much? Kristen estimated that Jalea took a total of 16 shots at the pregame and that she herself had taken probably 14 or 15. And Jalea weighed about 125 pounds. So that's a lot of alcohol running through her little body. After meeting up at the pregame, the group left in Jalea's car and a friend named Freddie drove. And they were going to bop around and pick up some other friends. So they pick up a girl named Katie Nelson. They're kind of driving around having fun. Remember, they had had a few drinks at this point.
A few.
A lot. But they did have a DD at this point, which was nice, Freddie. Then they go back to the pregame spot with Katie, Freddie, Jalea, and Kristen. And then they finally ended up at Nip and Q, which was their final destination.
I'm shocked. Kristen's story is accurate, just because I work in this industry. I am shocked that they allowed her through the doors. These two girls who have had 14 plus shots. Unless you're taking shots of like Boone's Farm. If they're taking shots of like hard alcohol, that is a...
They're very intoxicated.
Yeah, you are. You're either drinking every day and your body is used to that, or you are in a messy situation.
Mm-hmm. Kristen then talks about the end of the night. She says that they all decided they were going to go home. And that's when an argument broke out between her and Jalea, which we hear on the phone call with Toby. What the fight about is completely unknown, but Jalea's mom thinks that the girls were upset with Jalea because she had been dancing with Katie Nelson's ex-boyfriend, Chris, at a bar. This was a rumor circulating around that Kim Davis, the mom, kind of grasped onto. I think she was just looking for like what possibly could have had these two girls start a fight. Boys and alcohol.
Absolutely.
Always. So after this fight, this is when Jalea ended up calling her sister. Kristen confirmed that the group saw Jalea go sit in her car and they waited a few minutes to make sure that she wasn't going to drive, but instead wait for Toby to come get her like she had told her friends. When officers asked Kristen if she heard where Toby was going to get Jalea from, she said no, only that she knew Toby was on the way to get her sister. Kristen said that Toby called her around 3:50 a.m., which confirms Toby's story. And Toby was saying that she couldn't find her sister. She asked Kristen where she was, and that's when Toby hung up the phone. At this point in time, Kristen, Freddie, and Katie are all in a McDonald's drive-thru, which is confirmed by security footage. This McDonald's was 6 miles away from the scene of the incident. The next person police want to interview is Katie Nelson, and she actually voluntarily went in for questioning. She gives a written statement, and to sum it up, she says that she was picked up by Kristen, Jalea, Freddie, and a friend named Jordan. They all hung out, they pre-gamed, they went to the Nip and Q until it closed down around 3 a.m. The group all then dispersed, and Katie ended up going to Kristen's house with her. Katie confirmed that Toby called Kristen, and she told her about Jalea's accident, but that's really all that she knew. So Katie was kind of there, but she wasn't this huge player, according to law enforcement. The last person in that group of people was Freddie. He was interviewed, and the interview just gives more insight into the amount of drinking that went on that night. According to Freddie, everyone besides Katie was drinking. He never says the girls were drunk. I think just once again, he's from a law enforcement family himself. He probably knows what he should and shouldn't be saying.
Yeah, he's editing himself.
Yeah, but he does kind of tiptoe around it. One example of this is when he's asked what shape were the girls in when they left Nip and Q. Freddie responded with, they thought everything was funny.
They were giggling at everything, which we know.
Okay, they were obviously intoxicated. The crime scene and Jalea's car were all analyzed, and after almost a year and a half later, the investigation is complete. The police officially ruled Jalea's death accidental, stating that she was driving under the influence of alcohol and wasn't wearing a seatbelt. Her toxicology results were negative for illicit drugs, but her blood alcohol content was 0.19, more than twice the legal limit for driving.
I don't think that that's 14 shots, though. Well, I guess it depends how long the span is. But
and I think according, Kristen could have said, you know, maybe it was 14, maybe it was 7, maybe it was whatever. Maybe Jalea was doing water shots. It's kind of a hearsay type thing with that. This is where I kind of want to get into some thoughts and speculations around Jalea's death. The final report says that she was driving, she swiped the guardrail with her car, and that force alone ejected her body out of the passenger side window, where she struck the guardrail, killing her instantly. They say that her body flipped over her vehicle and into the other lane, where she was struck again by a tractor trailer. This is the first time during the whole investigation that a tractor trailer and a different car is being brought into the equation. The Ohio Medical Examiner's Office subsequently ruled Jalea's death an accidental death, with alcohol being a contributing factor. Because of all this, they consider the case closed. But what you don't understand is like this powerful mother bear that Jalea's mom, Kim, is. So she immediately brings in other independent investigators, and they say there is no way that what law enforcement is telling us is the truth. They say the evidence indicates that Jalea had been hit by her own vehicle, so she couldn't have been driving. They agree that she died from blunt force trauma to the head, but they think what happened was that she was hit by her car. The driver kept moving at a high rate of speed, smashing her head against other posts, and then the car dragged her body 82 feet into the passing lane, which is where her body was found.
Because she was decapitated, right?
Mm-hmm. Everyone is obviously frustrated with the outcome of this investigation, but then the case takes another turn in 2013, just a few years later. Someone who lived in the town of Marietta named Ember Staffer came forward and said that she actually witnessed the wreck and she has a story to tell. She said that she ran into Jalea at the Nip and Q bar and saw a fight break out in the parking lot. The confrontation ended, and then she saw Jalea pull out of the parking lot and the other three people follow in a different vehicle. Ember followed the cars, not sure why, and said they were all horseplaying down the interstate when all of a sudden, one of the cars forced Jalea's vehicle off the road, causing the accident. After police investigated her claim for more than 30 hours, Ember admitted that she was lying, and she was actually sentenced to 6 months in jail for making a false report.
Good.
If you make a false report, you are a horrible person. That was kind of a side note, but I came across it.
Well, and it's also one thing if you're like, hey, I heard this rumor. I just want to let you know, I don't know, but I heard this rumor. We talked about it in the Murdaugh trials. People had, you know, there was some whisperings floating around town. I think when there's an active investigation, sure, tell everything.
Mm-hmm.
But to make up that you actually witnessed it, you're placing people at the scene of a crime, first of all. How dare you? For what? To get some attention?
Right. Okay, Elise, I love whenever you put on your detective hat. So I'm going to send you over some photos. We're going to walk through these. The first thing I want to talk about is the clothes found at the scene of the crime, because supposedly Jalea sideswiped the guardrail and she was ejected through the passenger window. But can you describe these clothes and what they look like in your opinion?
It looks like bullshit. It looks like absolute bullshit. As soon as you said this, the first thing I thought was taking off someone's jacket makes sense. A stranger goes by, they're running up to check pulse, you know, are they breathing? Sure, you can unbutton someone's jacket in that instance. That makes sense to me. But this coat is, it used to be white. It is very bloody, incredibly bloody. There's like a what looks to be sort of like a drag mark in blood on the back middle side of it. But what stood out to me the most is you were talking about how these clothes were placed. They're in the reverse order of how someone would take them off. So if even if she was out of her mind drunk and she thought, I don't know, I'm going to go skipping titty out down the road. It would not make sense, even if she had done this prior to her death, which wouldn't make sense for the blood, obviously. But it would go jacket, shirt, bra.
Exactly.
For it to go bra, shirt, jacket.
Someone placed it there.
Someone absolutely placed it there. And it's interesting to me the reasoning of why that would be. Did they get something on her? Whatever the case may be. But now I'm immediately questioning a sexual motive in this.
It could be. And what's even weirder is that police to this day still say that no one else was there on the scene of the crime. They're saying
if they're decapitated,
that's how
you cannot take off your clothes and reverse put them on after they're bloody onto the guardrail.
But what they're saying is that whenever she was ejected,
her
clothes magically came off that way.
I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done. Okay. Men out there. Or lesbians, whatever. We've all worked around some bra straps in our life. I don't know what the hell bra strap is coming undone, flinging itself perfectly over, and then your shirt is following it, and your coat is following that.
It is true. They're truly stacked on top of each other.
Yeah, you'd have to be a magician. This is obviously post something tragic happening because this white jacket is doused in blood.
It is.
This is not like, oh, you can see a little spot on the sleeve. It is covered in blood. The guardrail looks to have some blood on it,
but let's talk about
like
that guardrail. Because according to law enforcement, her car smacked that guardrail. The guardrail looks perfectly in place.
That doesn't necessarily mean anything to me, depending on how, I mean, I don't understand cars, right? I'm terrible at cars, but depending on how fast she was going.
They are saying that she was going 70 miles per hour.
No, that's bullshit then. For her to go through her passenger side window certainly could happen, okay? I'll agree with that. It's weird.
Mm-hmm.
It would be very difficult. You would think like forward propulsion, right? But if they sideswiped, the car like veers, you know, left, her body goes in the opposite direction, sure, whatever. I can get on board with that. But how in the process of her hitting this guardrail, they're saying her body, and I'm not trying to laugh here, but this is absolutely ridiculous. Her body slaps the guardrail. Her clothes come off in reverse order, hang themselves somewhat neatly over this guardrail and quite precariously. Like they're not holding on too much. There's like a middle post that they are strewn over. And then she flies into the center of the road.
That's what they're saying. It's about to get weirder because you mentioned her car. Let's talk about the car for a second. Her car was found a quarter of a mile past where her body was found.
That's not weird to me. Is that really weird? Because you would think if someone's going 75 miles an hour and they hit a guardrail, could the car coast for that
long? I think
so.
But the location of her car was not down a straightaway. It was actually around two curves.
Oh.
So now we're saying the car has a ghost
GPS.
Driver.
Yeah, this isn't a Tesla.
No, it was like a Nissan. Yeah. I understand a car can hit a guardrail going 70 miles an hour. And yes, it can still project forward. But how the car was found running, locked, which also doesn't happen with this kind of car. You have to lock it from the inside, not the outside. And around two bends. It's impossible to go that way without someone driving the car. The damage found to her vehicle also is suspicious. It was on the right front side of the vehicle. But the damage does not appear to be consistent with a vehicle striking a guardrail at 70 miles per hour. That's fast. And guardrails are flimsy. I mean, I feel like I've backed into one at some point or another. And, you know, a little ding here and there going like 10 miles an hour, that thing's going to bend.
I'm looking at these pictures right now and the guardrail part makes sense. But you're right. It does not look like a 75 mile an hour car accident. It just doesn't.
Not at all. The other thing is if you look on the windshield, there's that spidering.
Yeah, it looks like something hit it because if you hit something with your front, it goes up onto the windshield, then to the roof.
Exactly. So what that indicates is that it kind of looks like someone honestly struck their head on the windshield.
Yeah, it does. It looked like someone, like if you were standing in front of a vehicle, we talked about this when we were talking about Murdaugh and Stephen Smith. If someone struck you in the front of a car and you're standing in the road, your body naturally kind of goes up. It goes onto the, you know, hood of the car, up and over.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's what this looks like.
Well, what's weird is there was no damage to the top of her car, nor was there any blood on top of the car. So police also said that there was no clothing fiber, hair, or blood on the glass remains in the passenger's front window. So all this is to say, they have this statement that she went out her passenger side window, but the evidence in the car is not showing that. It's showing more so that someone was in that car and hit her. Her head hit against that windshield. Maybe her body was up there. The body was then dragged 82 feet, which a car is not going to do unless it's being driven and steered by someone. The car then goes around two bends in the road, and all this damage happens to her body.
Oh, okay. So you're saying what with the guardrail? Because I'm looking at the side of this car, I'm like, that hit a guardrail or something.
Mm-hmm.
That may be like they hit her and did like a swerve.
Yes.
And so hit her, hit the guardrail, or vice versa. One of the two things happened.
Right.
But that she was not in the car. Someone was driving that car and she was in front of it. Could it have hit the guardrail before or after they hit her?
That's what Kim and the investigators think. But what angers this, you know, mama bear that I love was that investigators told her Jalea had likely gotten distracted, which caused her to strike the guardrail. That's fine. Not super unlikely, especially if she's been drinking a little bit. Maybe she went down to grab something. And they said that they think she was looking for something because her dome light was on, right? Okay. And her mom said that is absolutely not true because when she drove up, they forget it was dark out. That dome light was never on. She also says that Tabby, the sister, remembers many things from that night in great detail. She's kind of traumatized by it. And once again, Tabby says there's no way that light was on either. So it's kind of like they're making all these excuses for what happened and how Jalea had this accident. But once again, back to the evidence, it's not matching up.
Yeah, and I guess the dome light, if you give the benefit of the doubt to police officers, if it is the middle of the night, one goes in there looking for like anything, turns it on. You can't really fault them for that, right?
For them to use that and say, this is how we know she crashed because she was looking for something because that light was on. It's like, well, was it? Overall, there was just a total lack of professionalism when it came to this scene. Kim was extremely concerned about the fact that evidence had been left there. Some items like the hood of Jalea's coat that was covered in blood was still on the scene. A metal earring that she had been wearing that night was found 18 feet away from where her head first struck. Kim said that a detective told her father that they would photograph the earring, but they left it on the scene. It was just sloppy. And I can't help but think if they knew these kids were somehow tied to the scene, would they maybe not do their due diligence? The question that I keep coming back to was, if there was a crime, what's the motive, right? The only thing that's popped up in the years that this accident happened was that potential fight between Jalea and the girls for dancing with Chris. It doesn't seem like it's enough of a motive to kill someone.
We're going to put these pictures up and I'm going to warn you that some of them are incredibly graphic. I agree. When you look at the car, it looks like they hit the guardrail. When you look at the road, you can see the skid marks going off. That part all makes sense. But still, if you look at those skid marks, how the hell did her body, if it hit that guardrail, fly out of the passenger seat and also hit the guardrail? There'd have to be distance between the car and the guardrail for her and also hit the guardrail body to go.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're looking at this, the skid marks clearly show it was touching that guardrail.
Yeah.
I mean, there's paint all scratched up on the car. It's swiped just like you would think if someone slammed on the brakes.
Yeah. And the fact that her body was found 82 feet from what you're looking at, Elise.
Like, how do you have a point of impact be the guardrail, still have enough space for their thought that somehow her body flew out and also hit the guardrail when the car is the one touching the guardrail
right
at the time? And then her clothes, reverse magician Harry Potter shit.
And then her car around two curves, nicely parked.
No, this is not making any sense. She was not in that vehicle.
Right. It's one thing for an accident to happen. If she truly was the one driving that car, she hits the guardrail, she goes out. Okay. Yeah, her car might go a little bit down the road. But this is a very graphic, intense incident that happened. It does not make sense.
And I could see why they think then an oncoming car. And you know what? Even if someone did this to her, I think it's very plausible that another car was involved in this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they saw something in the road. Maybe they kind of swerved around it, tried to anyway. It's
but then call it a hit and run and say, you know, this notion of this tractor trailer that they like briefly talk about in the notes. It's like, well, are we not going to investigate this? We're just going to like say that she was drunk driving and that she did this to herself. That's not fair.
I don't like any of this. The clothes is what's really, really throwing me off. If she was drunk and she was driving, her body could have been ejected from the vehicle, then struck by an oncoming car. That's not that car's fault if she was in the road, you know, of
right,
course.
Right.
but they didn't get any reports of it, which if someone was already in the road, like I said, I'm not trying to be graphic here, but it's not your fault if you
No.
are in the middle of the night, dark, this doesn't look like it's a very populated area that they're driving on. It's just like trees in the background. So I'm sure it was very dark on this road. You might not have been able to stop in time. Not your fault, but they don't have anyone calling in to be like, oh my God, I don't know if I hit a deer. I don't know if I hit a what person. The hell I hit. Right.
And the time is so close to when Tabby got off the phone with her sister to when that 911 call came in. There's not a whole lot. It's not like, you know, it was 20 minutes. It was like 5 minutes that all this happened. The clothes are the weirdest part.
So if you don't, like, what, 10, 15 minutes you said in between the last call and her sister coming upon this?
So the call comes in at 3:48 a.m.
She's trying to call her sister.
The 911 call.
Got it.
At 3:53 a.m., Tabby comes upon the scene. So that is a total of 5 minutes.
In between this accident or whatever happened here had already happened. Someone's calling in what they thought was a deer, sadly mm-hmm. was not. But that doesn't tell us when this actually happened.
Correct. It doesn't tell us that. All we know is that the last call made was around 3:33 a.m.
Call comes in, means the accident's already happened. Sister rounds the corner just a few minutes after that call was placed into 911. But she last spoke to her sister, what, 20 minutes earlier?
Mm-hmm.
20 minutes seems like a long time, but it's not really when you have panicked people trying to, like, quote-unquote clean up a crime scene or cover something. I just find these clothes to be so suspicious because it makes me ask a whole lot of questions. Some I already talked about. Why and how would this miraculously come off her body in a reverse order? But also, I think what's even more troublesome is this was an incredibly graphic, horrific thing to witness. If someone accidentally hit her, let's just put that out there for benefit of the doubt. There's alcohol involved, there's bad driving, whatever the case might be. And someone accidentally hits her. She's out of her car, she's walking, someone else is in her car, they're going mm-hmm. on fighting and like, get car, you know, doing yeah. that thing, and they lose control of the vehicle. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt in that. But the fact that she was decapitated is what I keep going back to, because when that happens, trying to like make a joke out of this, there would be no reason to check a pulse.
Yeah.
To check for breathing. That's a pretty obvious she's dead. So why did the clothes need to come off? Totally would get it to have the jacket removed. Even the rest of it potentially. Not even in a sexual way if you're like trying to perform CPR. But there is no reason that you would come upon her in this state and think that she needs CPR.
None.
I don't care how much alcohol is in your system.
Yeah.
None. I don't even care how much shock you're in. No one would think to do CPR on her. Why are these clothes on? And the clothes are off after the accident because they are soaked in her blood.
Mm-hmm.
And if an innocent passerby came by, or the second vehicle even, what would their reasoning be for taking off her clothes?
Or if they were taken off, which, once again, why? I bet someone would say, hey, I put those clothes there. They were kind of in the middle of the road. I stacked them up. Like, the good Samaritans who were helping with this, like, they were blocking off traffic to make sure that nothing else was damaged.
Sure.
I feel like they all got investigated, hopefully, one would think. But law enforcement's answer to, oh, those came off whenever she went through the window, they caught it on the guardrail. It's like, you didn't even try to look into that.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me. Like you said, it could be that we're overlooking at it, where it's just a human that came upon this scene. Like you said, is if the clothes truly did somehow come off of her body, maybe they placed them there. Mm-hmm. But for what purpose?
For what purpose?
Because I can't figure it out. Were they trying to like do their own collection of evidence, didn't want the coat to get run over? But if they're blocking traffic, they don't have to worry about that.
Right.
This is making me a little squeamish. I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
And exactly how you feel is how Kim and Tabby and the people of Marietta feel. They just feel like something happened. Jalea was met with foul play, but that law enforcement never... They did a year and a half long investigation, supposedly, and all they concluded was that she was drunk driving and that this was an accidental death. It just feels so glossed over when you look at the evidence, like the clothes. like the car being around two bends and then the state of her body. It's hard for me to wrap my head around. And really all Kim wants is for someone else to just reopen this case and look into it. Look at the people that she was with last. To your point, it could have been someone who accidentally hit her, but just do a little bit more digging into it. One thing that Kim does is she is such a strong advocate for her daughter. There is a Facebook page called Justice for Jalea. I will say, I was on that page recently. The recent posts are odd. I almost feel like it got hacked. There's like photos of cars and horses. It's super odd. But if you go to the upper right-hand corner and filter it by the year, click 2011, and you can just see how much love Kim has for her daughter. She's always posting like, I just want to get the word out. I want this to be reopened. This is not how, you know, I want my daughter to be remembered. So there is a change.org petition, which we'll link, trying to get some signatures to reopen this case. I'm going to encourage everyone listening to go do that, because at the end of the day, if it was someone that you knew, you would just want to sleep at night knowing
what happened.
Yeah. And that an investigation was properly done.
What's your gut telling you?
I think it was the people who saw her last. I think it was an accident. I don't think that they intended for something like this to happen. Or I also can see her driving, her being intoxicated, getting out of the car, someone hitting her and that person running away. But that's a hit and run that needs to be looked into.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Because you said the people that she was with last were found how far away?
6 miles, timestamped at a McDonald's.
From like CCTV footage where they're all in like good spirits.
Yeah.
No one's like covered in blood.
No. And the car's not damaged or anything. So I don't know. It's such a mystery.
Here's my thought. And I don't generally speculate, but because I'm not placing blame on anyone specific, mm-hmm. I feel comfortable doing this. And we love to speculate. I should take that back. We love to speculate, but I'm not publicly going to like say this person did it.
For sure.
Because that's not my role.
Right.
And I actually wonder, in this case, could all things be true at once? She was intoxicated. Her blood alcohol level confirms that. She's upset. I can say from experience, I definitely have made some regrettable phone calls when you're upset and you're drunk and you're like, you will never believe what's told Grinch. You know, like you're calling and trying to like repeat the whole story, and everything is way more dramatic than it would be if there was not alcohol involved, right? Because it lowers your ambitions. You're not thinking clearly.
Agree.
You can't keep a rational mind, especially if you have 14 plus shots. Right. Or whatever she was. So let's say she's on the phone with her sister. I hate Kristen. She did this. She is terrible. They were so mean to me just because I danced with a boy. And during that conversation or shortly after, she does hit the guardrail. Her body is not ejected. Maybe she gets out of the vehicle and the side of the vehicle is all messed up. She gets out of the vehicle and is kind of stumbling around. Maybe she hit her head at some point during this little crash. I don't think it's 75 miles an hour, but that's just me. She hits her head and she's kind of stumbling around. Not only now is she drunk, but maybe concussed, dazed, in shock, whatever the case might be. Plus, if you've ever been in a car accident, you know that even if you are totally fine, there is so much adrenaline coursing through your body afterwards. So pair that, you're shaky, you're out of sorts.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And it's nighttime. This is the middle of the night. What if she herself kind of wandered into the road trying to flag someone down for help?
That is totally possible.
And then an oncoming car hits her.
Mm-hmm.
That oncoming car, maybe they had been drinking and panic. I thought I hit, you know, a deer or something. I hit a girl. I got to cover this up. Could they theoretically, in that 20 minutes, move her vehicle because the keys were in it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It was still running. Move her vehicle and get the hell out of there.
Yeah, they could. It's things like that that Kim just wants answers. Like, if that's what happened, then do your investigating, law enforcement, and say that's what happened. Don't try and blame it on someone who just swiped a guardrail and somehow flew out the passenger side window and it's all on her. Like, there is another party involved. That's what I'm almost positive of.
Me too.
But who?
I think that there's a mystery person involved here, but I don't think it was intentional, which then you don't have a motive. It was just an accident.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm placing blame on Jalea for her own death, but she shouldn't have been behind the wheel. And that's a regrettable choice that a lot of people, thank God, come home from.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't. And I don't think that was the only decision that was bad that night, because something clearly happened afterwards. Yeah, There's just no way. The clothes would not. No.
So many things.
I'm not buying it.
No. So we'll post on our Instagram. I'm going to have a little chat on our stories. Head over to it. Tell us what you think happened.
And obviously, we're going to be super respectful about this because at the end of the day, Jalea did lose her life, which is heartbreaking. But all I want is for our listeners to go fill out that change.org petition. Hopefully, they can reopen the investigation and just get Kim and Tabby some answers.
Wow. As soon as you think that here's what could have happened, there's another piece that doesn't fit into that narrative.
Right.
So, like you said, if you guys can take the time, this case needs some further investigation. We are no forensic experts. We are certainly no car experts. At least I am not. So I don't know anything, and I'm looking at this and this isn't adding up. So please sign that petition. I'm sure just her family seeing the support, even if it doesn't get reopened, must be quite comforting that her daughter's story is still being talked about and that there's people that care about getting justice for whatever happened tonight, because right now I'm not buying what the police are saying. I would say thank you for covering that, but you did such a good job that I'm really left feeling very frustrated, to be honest.
Frustrated, sad, confused, overwhelmed, all the things.
I do just want to end this with a quick little warning. I know a lot of you like to check out some of the resources that we find and do some digging yourselves. I have seen crime scene photos of this case that Annie has shared with me, but they are violent and graphic and disturbing. So don't just go to Google image search, you guys, for this. We will post pictures that are more appropriate on our Instagram that give you the images that aren't so disturbing to see, because they are incredibly, incredibly disturbing. So I just wanted to leave that little warning out there for you. Annie is going to be stepping away for a few weeks while we get our little scariest squad member out into the world. I say we.
It is a wee thing.
I don't want any help in getting this baby out, but I do want to spoil it with lots of scary squad love. So please be patient. You're going to put up with just my voice for a few weeks, but I have some really amazing interviews coming up, and we are just, I think I can speak for everyone, we are wishing you a very, very safe delivery in whatever form that means or takes for you. But as always, until then.